Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording this show on Friday, December 10th, 2021. So, Drew, another crazy week out in L.A., or?
Another crazy week. Jim, you know me. I am crazed, and this is a totally crazy time of year as awards are getting underway, and you know, I just filed my Critics' Choice ballot. I'm writing articles for the Wrap magazine that'll be coming out in the next issue. So yeah, I'm just running around, Jim. So it's nice to just hang out and get to chat with you for a little bit.
Well, we can't hang out all that long. Nancy and I actually have to head out shortly. We are going down to New Jersey so Nancy can attend No Lie Christmas Con. Have you heard of this? This is a...
Not until you walked into my life, Jim. So please tell the people.
Okay. It is a three-day long celebration of all things Hallmark holiday film related. That's being held in the New Jersey Convention Center in Edison, New Jersey. While Nancy's doing that, I'm going to be across the river in Manhattan. I'm headed to the Met to catch the inspiring Walt Disney, the animation of French decorative art exhibit, which opened just today, you know, at the Fifth Avenue facility. This is the Met's first ever exhibition exploring the work of Walt Disney, and it's a celebration of hand-drawn animation. They pulled 60 individual works of 18th century European decorative art and design, tapestries, furnitures, clocks, porcelain, and they juxtapose them with 150 production pieces that have been culled out of the Disney Animation Research Library, the Disney Archives. Even Imagineering has kicked in a couple of pieces along with the Disney Family Museum. And by the way, Drew, we are supposed to be interviewing the gentleman, Wolf Bruchard, who curated the exhibit on an upcoming Fine Tuning. And as promised, I will get you a copy of the catalog. So
yes, it'll be like I'm there. I've got to go out to the Bauer Museum. Did you see there's a new Disney exhibit out there about Disney's crown jewels?
No.
That's all about the ornamentation of your favorite Disney princesses and live action and animation, and even includes the Heart of the Ocean from Titanic. Because if we'll recall, is a Fox co-production. Yeah, holy exactly. Cow. So yeah, I'll have to make it out there soon to check that out.
That's intriguing because they had that Imagineering exhibit.
I know. I missed it. I think it's in Atlanta or something right now.
Well,
right?
I think it's across the street from Elvis's place.
That's right.
Yeah. In the event center for Graceland. And I was trying to convince Nancy, you know, we should drive down to the Disney Live event and you know, just slide on over and check out the Imagineering thing. But when I was chatting with the folks at the archive, they weren't willing to discuss where that exhibit was going after the Graceland Exhibition Center, but it is going to continue to travel. So I wonder if that's the case with the crown jewels thing at the Bauer. But
I'm sure. Yeah, it looks really slick, but just opened this week. So I'll try to get over there soon.
Well, cool. Okay. So we should get to the news. And as always, the news portion of this week's Fine Tuning is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jimmy Little Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. Drew, let's start with some television-related news. The season 2 of Centaur World started on Netflix earlier this week, Tuesday, December 7th. They dropped 8 episodes rather than 10. The first season of Centaur World, which debuted on Netflix back in July of this year, had 10 episodes. And when this show, which is created by Megan Nicole Dong, was initially greenlit and announced back in July of 2019. It was with the understanding that it would be 2 seasons of 10 episodes each. And, you know, with the pandemic, we've seen this happen. Didn't What If, the Marvel series, was supposed to deliver 10, but because of issues related to the pandemic, they can only deliver 9 for season 1 of that show, right?
Yeah, I think that extra episode is going into the second season, but I don't know if that's 100% confirmed, but obviously we know the second season is coming.
Yep.
And we've also talked about how they order these batches of episodes too. When they announce there's a second season, it's usually already been produced and is sitting somewhere.
I mean, that's it exactly. Here are the pile of episodes and you decide what season 1, what season 2. And what's interesting is fans of Centaur World are actually hoping that these 2 not delivered episodes will be rolled into a season 3 of the show, which, just to be clear, hasn't been greenlit, not even hinted at. What's important to understand here is that Netflix, when it cancels something, is pretty quick to do it. I mean, just this past week with the Cowboy Bebop thing, again, a live-action version of the anime, that sort of took everyone by surprise. I mean, that show had barely been on a month at this point, right?
Yeah, it hadn't even been at 28 days, which is usually at least the Netflix cursory period. But, you know, the problem with the animated shows is there's only so many animators around, and, like, you know, City of Ghosts was amazing and didn't get picked up, and she is already on to something else. So, you know, I would not be surprised if Megan Nicole has something else going on and cannot come back, even if they wanted more Centaur World. So it's tenuous over there.
That is. But on the other hand, you know, when they're in your corner, they're in your corner. You were just talking as we were pre-gaming that somewhat surprised there's yet another Aardman thing coming, right?
Yeah, it's on, I think, right now. It's a new Shaun the Sheep holiday special called Shaun the Sheep, The Flight Before Christmas. And I think I speak for Jim when I say that we love Shaun the Sheep.
We do.
And Back to the Outback is out today. So we got to finish. We only saw 20 minutes of it or whatever. That's so we got to see. They hadn't even gotten to the Outback.
Okay, now I know what my Friday night looks like. As we're talking about Netflix, also worth noting that season 4 of Camp Cretaceous showed up on this streaming service just a week ago, Friday, December 3rd, 11 episodes. And you were commenting that the trailer for DreamWorks Dragons, The Nine Realms, just dropped. And it had some thoughts about the look of that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought it looked very similar to Camp Cretaceous. It's modern day. It's kids discovering the dragons sort of underneath the earth or something. And it just looked very similar to Camp Cretaceous, just in the way that it is being sort of framed and animated. And did you not get the same vibe?
No. That's the thing. You know, I got your note. I followed the link, and it's like, wow, Drew got it and won. But at the same time, the dragon that we get to look at, I think they did the DreamWorks Dragon holiday special a few years ago, and
this
lead dragon looks an awful lot like Toothless's offspring. So
yeah, what was the other one called? The
white one. Say you would ask that.
You see them at the end of How to Train Your Dragon 3, so you don't even have to have watched the Christmas special.
No, not at all. But
yeah, I agree. I think it will probably be one of those dragons, but. I mean, it's a cool idea. I mean, I always wondered if they were ever going to bring it into the kind of modern day, and they certainly have.
Sure, you've seen the most recent updated piece of concept art for Epic Universe, and literally right after you enter the park on the right side is the How to Train Your Dragon themed area for the theme park, and they're leaning heavily into the whole Toothless era of that franchise, so. And it's got a theater show and a ride and meet and greets and the whole schmear.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, we talked about how Epic Universe at one point had a Sing-themed hotel. And it should not surprise you, Jim, that Sing 2 takes place almost entirely in a hotel.
Ooh.
So I would say watch that with an eye towards Epic Universe.
I will. You know, in fact, just today got an invite. I guess that they're starting to do the press screenings next week. I know they had done the earlier audience come to this screening, so you know we can get conversations going about Sing 2.
Yeah, they've been screening it. I mean, every day is probably an exaggeration, but it's not much of an exaggeration out here because they're going for that animated feature nomination, and also U2 has a new song on the soundtrack, which they are very, very excited about. So if you want to read my interview with Garth Jennings, who directed it, and I also have a piece in the late January issue of the Rap Magazine that's all about how they created Bono's big musical number in the movie. So keep an eye out for that, Jim. I'll send you links whenever they go up.
Cool, cool. All right. Speaking of things headed into theaters, we had our trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog 2 dropped early this week during the Games Awards. What was your take on this one? I mean, face it, we get Tails, we get Knuckles, and we also get Jim Carrey going full bore as the villain from the game. I mean,
just the most 90s Jim Carrey has been in quite a while, I feel like.
No, absolutely. Yeah, that we're back in the Mask Country.
Yes, we really are. So, yeah, it looked fine. I mean, I don't know. Those movies are not for us, Jim. They are for very young people who need to be entertained for an hour and a half, and I hope this does the job. But I mean, the animation looks beautiful. I think I sent you a note about who I think DNEG and MPC are the two most responsible for the animation, and I think that it looks great. Looks really, really nice. It seems like it's coming out like 8 months after the original, which is very weird. But
some of that had to do with the first trailer of that movie, and this one seemed to have overall gotten a positive response, whereas that trailer did not. But that's another story for another time.
They had all the assets ready this time, Jim. No more redesigning.
Well, there we go. That's coming out April 8th of 2022. We also just this week got word about Disney's new animated feature for 2022 for the Thanksgiving weekend. Strange World. And, you know, we got a piece of concept art and we got kind of a description of the film. The Strange World centers on the legendary Clades, of a family of explorers whose differences threaten to topple their latest and most crucial mission. On Instagram, Disney Animation teased that Strange World journeys deep into an uncharted and treacherous land where fantastical creatures await.
Does this sound familiar to you at all, Jim? It's like a movie from, I would say, roughly 20 years ago.
All right. Directed by Don Hall, who did Big Hero 6 and Ray and the Last Dragon.
And Winnie the Pooh, our favorite traditional animated movie. Yeah.
He says this movie is a nod to pulp magazines, popular fiction from the first half of the 20th century. Yes, what you said does concern me. I look at this, and in fact, you have done so much writing about Treasure Planet and Atlantis. The pitch of, you know, we do all these movies where if we're at Disneyland, we go straight through Sleeping Beauty Castle. It wouldn't be interesting to finally do a movie where you make a left and go into Adventureland. And what especially concerns me about sort of a science fiction adventure is in June of next year, aren't we getting a science fiction adventure from Pixar, the Lightyear movie?
I thought the same thing, Jim. I really did. They are literally the same audience. Yeah. They are seemingly the same tone, because Lightyear is kind of a throwback 60s space movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last time they bet on back-to-back sci-fi animated movies did not go particularly well for Disney. But hey, we got the girls from Turning Red coming soon, Jim, and I think we're both very excited about that one.
We are. From a promotional point of view,
yeah.
There's only 5.5 months. That's separate. I mean, again, Lightyear comes out on June 17th of next year. Strange World comes out on November 23rd. When you put French vanilla next to vanilla, hey, you love these flavors. It's like, well, yeah, but I also love other flavors. I mean, couldn't you push this off by a year?
And Lightyear, you know, will be on Disney Plus by the time.
Oh, God, yeah.
Strange World comes out, too. So,
speaking of things that are interesting, we also got news of a brand new live-action animation adult comedy, Strays. This is basically a follow-up from Josh Greenbaum, the gentleman who brought us Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, which a surprising number of Nancy and my friends have seen and really, really like.
It's amazing. Have you watched it yet? It's great.
I have not.
Oh, it's great.
Okay, well, I'll
Josh also directed a really terrific documentary that you can watch on Hulu, mm-hmm. about the Dana Carvey Show, beloved. Yeah, if you've never seen that, Jim, that is wonderful, too. This might come as a shock, but that was incredibly seminal to me as a child and the formation of my sense of humor watching the barely aired Dana Carvey Show.
Isn't that the one that had the Fright Wig sketch, the Fright Wig family, where their reaction to everything would, yeah, and their hair would go straight up?
Yeah, I believe so. They spent a lot of time talking about the racists of Maine. Do you remember them? Who would sit on their porch and say racist things? Okay. I mean, it's a really great documentary. If you need a good giggle, Jim.
Okay.
Which I think you might. check out that documentary.
Especially this week, I feel like I need a good giggle because of the news coming out of Disneyland. One of my favorite characters from the 1980s is, do we call this a wardrobe malfunction?
We'll talk about it later. But the thing about Strays that I'm worried about, and I told you this earlier, is that I wonder if it's going to eat into that potential of Gennady's, what was it called? Fixed for Sony Pictures Animation. That was announced. Yeah, it sounds a little bit similar. It sounds like they filmed all the live action stuff for Strays already. Mm-hmm. And now they're doing animation, and it's being produced by Lord and Miller, who we love and who's, done amazing things. But yeah, I wonder, Jim.
Again, I want this to work. Speaking of things that I want to work, Wendell and Wild, since this thing got announced, the Keegan-Michael Key and the Jordan Peele project, really been up for this, and you stumble across this. Well, it's not really a trailer. It's more of a dedicated website.
Yeah, I don't know what the marketing strategy is for this. We've seen a previous clip with Wendell and Wild, mm-hmm. and now we have one that's showing us, I think her name is Kat, who's like a demon hunting teenage girl.
Yep.
And we just see a few seconds of her, but the design is so striking. The animation is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cannot wait to see. I mean, the fact that we're getting a Henry Selick stop motion movie and a Guillermo del Toro stop motion movie in the same year, that's pretty exciting.
I agree. Folks, you have to go check this out. It's Cats Boombox, and Cats with a K, and that's all one word, .com. And it, seriously, if you go there, there's a boombox sitting at the top of a staircase that is playing music. And
it's always new music, too.
But again, this Henry Selick film will be coming out on Netflix next year, 2022. And speaking of next year, Mickey's Toontown will be closing in March of 2022 for a refresh of reimagining. And one element of that debuted this week, and that's not going to please Roger Rabbit fans, but we'll talk about that more in a moment. Do we mention at the top of the show that you've seen the new Matrix, but you can't talk about it, right?
Correct. I am forbidden from talking about it, but I will talk about it next week, I'm sure. I've seen everything, Jim, except for Spider-Man, which I'm seeing on Monday. So,
cool. And what did you think, by the way, of the Ghostbusters Afterlife? I mean, Alice absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It's so fun. It's got so much heart. The effects are wonderful, and you could probably watch it at home, Jim, whenever it comes out. But if you can get to a theater, it's well worth it, I think.
Okay, now speaking of the effects, and not to spoil kind of a key element of this film.
I think that people, if they haven't been spoiled, they probably know this is coming. But anyway, go ahead. So
Harold Ramis's character, we lost Harold like 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
I think it was
17, 13, something, yeah, 16,
something like that. Something like that. Yeah.
And what's terrific about this film is that the original Ghostbusters come back at a key moment, and Egon gets to join his friends. Which over the past couple of years, this has been the sort of thing that has been done in films with varying degrees of success. And some people,
who would you say is a more successful version than others? We got Tarkin. Tarkin came back.
Peter Cushing. Yeah. That was worthwhile. I mean, for me, I track them all the way back to, remember that Fred Astaire ad where the family allowed them to reuse the footage of Fred dancing, but he was with a vacuum cleaner?
I thought you were going to bring up the Humphrey Bogart Tales from the Crypt episode that was directed by Robert Zemeckis back in the day. Do you remember that one?
And what was the Schwarzenegger, the infamous, Last Action Hero, where, it's only for like a tenth of a second, but they do bring Bogart. There's that moment where the police chief is partnering up people, and you get the animated cat and you get Humphrey Bogart from the Big Sleep. So this is hard to do, but you just wrote a wonderful piece for The Wrap about how they approach this, how they approach bringing Harold Ramis back for.
It's really fascinating. And it took a lot of work to bring him back. But the guy that worked on it did Sean Young in Blade Runner 2047 or 2049, which I think is also one of the better, recreations. So, Yeah, if you're interested, go check that out. It's really, really interesting. Everybody's perspective on it and how they accomplished that.
Just one question. In this conversation, how often do the term subsurface scattering come up?
Well, you know, what's interesting is they actually, so the kind of ghostly effect was an afterthought. They actually created a version of Harold from 1984, put him into footage from Ghostbusters, and people could not tell the difference.
Wow.
So all the glowing stuff and all of that was an afterthought. They had to get Harold down completely. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's pretty amazing what they did. So check that out.
I've been a Harold Ramis fan since his, you know, the SCTV days back when he was Mo Green up in Mellonville, you know. Oh, that was a great show. And well, all right. Now I got to go take a look at this. Okay. So anyway, getting to that Disneyland news, Drew.
Yes.
Back in November, we learned that there was an ambitious new reimagining of Mickey's Toontown going to debut in 2023 and supposedly tied to the launch of the West Coast version of Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. And here's from the announcement on the Disney Parks blog. Building on the legacy of Mickey's Toontown, Imagineers are working to create some all-new experiences so families and young children can have more opportunities to play together inside of Disneyland Park. The beloved Mickey's Toontown will transform into a vibrant symphony of sights, sounds, and sensations. Focusing on today's families with young children, Mickey's Toontown will feature new play experiences as well as open, grassy play spaces where everyone can unplug. The land will feature landscaping for both spontaneous family play and parental relaxation. So, and then, you know, Josh D'Amaro, the head of Disney Parks, stepped in. And in fact, he announced this last month at IAPA at the Attractions Expo. But he goes on to say, the newly reimagined Mickey's Toontown will be a welcoming place for families and younger guests can connect and play together in fun new ways. So, again, we've got young children. And we've got younger guests. And God, the Dreaming Tree. Did you hear about they're building a Dreaming Tree as part of this expansion of Mickey's Toontown? Which,
no.
Do you know about the Dreaming Tree in Marceline?
No. You
know, oh, my God. You know, Marceline, again, the birthplace of Walt Disney. Excuse me, not the birthplace. Again, so many people claim chunks of Walt's life. So, you know, this is where he grew up as a child. And the folks in Marceline, evidently the archive actually found this, that Walt at one time would talk about a tree he'd climb up in Marceline. And they found the tree. And they dubbed it the Dreaming Tree. And they made it part of their tour. And then the Dreaming Tree, you know, I try not to read too much into this, but the Dreaming Tree got struck by lightning. But they saved three saplings from it, so they replanted it in Marceline. There's a sapling that's been planted at Disneyland that actually has been moved to an undisclosed location out of concern that someone will, you know, some guests will try to steal it. And then I guess there's a third tree being held in reserve. But
this is perverse. What are you talking? This is insane.
I'm serious. But the thing is, there's a children's book, Walt's Dreaming Tree, and there's a whole sort of cottage industry that's grown up around this one vague reference that Walt made in an interview that nobody's entirely sure that Walt wasn't maybe fudging the details, you know, as part of an interview. But anyway, you know, so that there's going to be a Dreaming Tree in Mickey's Toontown, which again closes in March of 2022. But the thing we're talking about today, folks, they announced it back in September of this year that Disney had made a decision out ahead of this reimagining of Mickey's Toontown that they were going to make some changes in Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin.
Well, also that IAPA map that they released had vibrant colors all around Toontown and then like a vague gray blob in the right hand corner that was clearly Roger Rabbit, but might not be Roger Rabbit for very much longer, right?
Yeah. We were just talking about West Side Story, which is directed by Steven Spielberg and is being released through 20th Century Studios at Disney. So you would think this would be a relatively happy time between Disney and Amblin, right? In fact, weren't you just mentioning, was it this week that a brand new 4K deluxe version of Who Framed Roger Rabbit just came out?
Yes. Yeah. First time I think it's been released in 4K. So
this film comes out in June of 1988, and it's a sensation. And it was kind of the 1-2 punch that year of Roger Rabbit and Little Mermaid that, you know, sort of launched the second golden age of Disney animation. And
oh, yeah. I was on the phone with Peter Schneider a couple of weeks ago, and he said that the animators came to Disney in the late 80s because Roger Rabbit made animation cool for the first time in their entire life. So I don't think that the importance of Roger Rabbit in the grand scheme of Disney animation cannot be overstated. I mean, it was just huge. It was like a bomb that went off. I mean,
then speaking of bombs, the bombshell in that movie was Jessica. I mean, that scene at the Ink and Paint Club where she's on stage and that's Amy Irving singing for Jessica and the speaking voice by Kathleen Turner, between the way the character interacted with Eddie and the other people in the club. And
what about that shimmer effect that ILM did?
No, absolutely. You know, but amazing to look at, and but a very Tex Avery female. I mean, is it clearly inspired by cartoons like Red Hot Riding Hood and that sort of thing? Because it's a huge success, it eventually makes its way into the park. You know, we get our Roger Rabbit cartoon spin ride in January of 94. In fact, Mickey's Toontown had opened the previous year, January 24th, 1993. And the story I've always been told was that Roger Rabbit was ready. I mean, it was completed. But the decision was made to the effect of mothball the attraction for a full year so they would have something for locals to come back and see in year two. And, you know, we got the Tokyo version of Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin opened with that park's version of Mickey's Toontown in April of 96. And 4 years, this attraction has run, and you know, and it's like, has anybody complained? Because this is the thing, the notion of now suddenly, at least according to the announcement, in September of this year, that Jessica evidently decided she wanted to have a career. She's going to become a private detective and break up a crime ring that's operating in Toontown. So wasn't the original inciting event of the whole ride, you know, Jessica had been thrown in the trunk of the car by the weasels and Roger had to go rescue her. And they pulled her out of the trunk, you know, a month or so ago. And now they have her posing with the weasels, but she's now in Dick Tracy's outfit.
Well, did you not flash to another instance when Jessica was replaced by Dick Tracy? And I'm speaking, of course, Jim, of our favorite nighttime entertainment district, Pleasure Island.
Oh, yes.
I think it was called Jessica's Warehouse, and it literally sold lingerie.
It did.
Like, it yes, did. Yes, right? And like, how far have we moved from them being okay with a lingerie store with a giant Jessica Rabbit on the roof?
Like on the Las Vegas Strip, the cowpoke whose arm moved, Jessica's leg lifted up and down. And wonderful, kinetic, beautiful to look at. But you were saying it's just kind of intriguing, the message that's being sent here, that we'll talk about why Jessica is now, quote unquote, powerful.
Well, I mean, she's empowered because they're dressing her like a man, which I think is just really weird. Like she can't be sexy and empowered. It's got to be one or the other. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's a super weird message to send. And I think the execution of how they're rolling her out, I mean, the first time they took her out of the ride, they had not announced anything. People just went on it and she was gone. And I don't know if you saw the really poor, like, newspaper that they put up in the queue that sort of explains that she's decided to fight crime. It's like, but that was what Roger and Eddie were doing that. I don't understand why she has to do it too. Or is that the only thing that she could do in Toontown? Or I guess it's maybe the only thing that fits with the story of Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin. Yeah, I think it's pretty unreasonable and totally unnecessary. You tell me.
It's not like Disney hasn't done this before. I mean, think about it. Roger Rabbit comes out in June of 88. In September of 89, we get that wonderful Pixar short, Knick Knack, where we have the snowman who's trapped in the Welcome from Gnome snow globe, who looks across the way, and there's the beautiful bosomy mermaid from Welcome to Atlantis, I want to say. And the whole short is about him trying to, oh no, wait a minute, that she's, I'm blowing the gag. Because it's like, there's the Welcome to Miami girl who's wearing the bikini and you know, right, rather large chested. And that's the whole gimmick of the thing, is that he's trying to get there, get out of his snow globe and get to the Welcome to Miami. But what ends up happening is that in 2003, Disney makes the decision that they need a short to be paired with Finding Nemo when it goes out into theaters. So Pixar decides Knick Knack never got the theatrical release, the attention it deserved.
Wasn't it made for a theme park or something? Wasn't it in 3D?
I want to say, yes, it was done in 3D, but it debuted at SIGGRAPH. In fact, this was when SIGGRAPH used to be held in Boston. And remember, I was living in Boston at the time, and it was just the roars that came up from all the horny nerds about, you know, how genuinely funny this short was. And look, boobs. But again, you know, now it's May of 2003, and they're looking to pair it with Nemo. And John Lasseter talks about how now they're all dads, and a lot of them have daughters, and suddenly they're looking at the giant boob jokes, and now they kind of feel like boobs because they made this short. So both the Miami Knick Knack and the mermaid and the fishbowl were reanimated to have much smaller breasts. And in fact, the mermaid, they actually put a seashell bra on her like Ariel. And Lasseter defends the change. It's like, it wasn't big, bad Disney coming in and insisting we do this. This was our own choice. It was just, was crossing a line personally for as a father, so I decided to decrease these characters' breast size. So if you look back, July of 1998, when Melody Time came out, people talked about how Disney had waded into the VHS release and had edited out all of Pecos Bill's use of tobacco. And in fact, it was also Make Mine Music, right? The other package feature from the 40s that had, actually, it was the opening of the film, The Martins and the Coys, which big hillbilly battle number with all sorts of gunplay, and that cut. And weren't you just talking about you recently got the Blu-ray of that?
Yes, and it is still gone, even though it says that it was supposed to be unreleased. Mm-hmm. And early material suggested that all 10 musical segments were there. Mm-hmm. It actually includes the 2000 censored version of the film, which edits the opening titles and removes the Martins and McCoy sequence, as well as includes all the edits of All the Cats Join In, which edited out sexualized imagery.
That's so, literally 1940s Bobby Soxer dancing. Often you'd see a flash of panties or that sort of thing. But that's where we are now. So
yeah,
Jessica Rabbit has to wear a trench coat, and we have to still have it edit out the Bobby Soxers from the 1940s. Because, oh my God, it's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, Make My Music is now currently the only Disney animated feature still not available on Disney Plus as well. I don't know what the hell. I mean, is this the next article I write? Clearly, I mean, why they've chosen to censure this is just insane.
But at the same time, Josh D'Amaro, they seem pretty upfront about it. I mean, you go through that press release, and how many variations on young children, young people, young, you can't possibly expose them to Jessica Rabbit as she is in the 1988 film, which, by the way, you can buy right now on Blu-ray.
Wonderful, you really want to see Jessica. 4K. Yeah.
This is one of these moments where there's this myth about this, the monolith Disney, the master of synergy Disney. And you and I both know Disney is 35 or 38 now, individual little companies that sometimes share goals, sometimes share agendas, but mostly don't really talk to one another.
Yeah. And especially because Toontown was part of an effort to make Disney cool again for older kids. I mean, it was right around the corner from Videopolis. Mm-hmm. And now it is going to the kids. So we'll can't wait to see what the BP oil spill guy, how he spins this one, Jim.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned that, because it's like Eisner didn't hire Zena Mucha till 2003. He had literally been on the job for almost 20 years before he felt he needed a crisis management person, you know, somebody who could really wade in. And let's be honest here, it was the middle of Save Disney at the time, and it was a smart move. Iger, on the other hand, saw what Zena had done for Michael, and it's like, hey, you want to hang around, you know, just in case. And just the fact that here, Chapek hasn't even taken over yet, and Zena is walking out the door with Bob come January. So who does he reach out to be his communications, you know, chief of communications, you know, his crisis management guy? But as you said, the British Petroleum guy, the guy who handled the Deep Horizon oil spill in the Gulf.
A real friendly face that'll put your mind at ease about a cuddly family corporation, and also lead a lobbying group in Washington, D.C. that Disney is establishing for such things as the copyright battle over Mickey Mouse that will be approaching very soon. So, you know, a lot of fun things going on over at Disney these days, Jim.
Anybody who has actually been on Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway knows how violent and how edgy and funny that is. And the notion is you're putting in that ride, but you got to make Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin toothless. Are you actually talking to one another? All right, let's talk about more pleasant topics. In fact, what's been interesting for me is seeing other people around the web talk about how much they've been enjoying your Ghost Protocol anniversary shows over on Light the Fuse. I mean, I feel weirdly parental. It's like, oh, hey, look, other people are enjoying this. So,
yeah, I mean, it's always a surprise, Jim. Let's put it that way.
No, it's great. It's great. Now, is that continuing, or, you know, we got
a... Oh, yeah. We've got a lot of fun stuff coming up. We just talked to the guy who plays the Fog, who's the kind of shadowy... Mm-hmm. Arms dealer who took over for Vanessa Redgrave. And yeah, we talked to Anthony Giacchino, who's Michael Giacchino's brother, who did all the behind the scenes stuff. And so, yeah, our celebration of Ghost Protocol will dip into 2022 for sure.
Oh, cool. Okay. Cause they've been such an amazing series of shows, and you get to hear so much great Hollywood history in addition to getting a deeper appreciation of the Mission Impossible films, the John Wick franchise, and likewise, you know, really looking forward to, you know, more stories about Top Gun and of course the sequel Maverick, which we get next year. But anyway, Drew, if folks are looking to keep closer tabs on you, and of course you're always posting great fun stuff on social media, where can they find you?
Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt, on Instagram and Twitter.
Nancy, would like me to remind you all that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook at Jim Hill Media News. And so thanks for listening now, folks. And Drew and I will be back with a brand new fine tuning next week. Till then, thanks for listening and have a good night.